We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus, our morning talk show. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. American women in record numbers have served in Iraq, and while they have officially been banned from combat, the reality of war today means that military women take the same risks and they experience the same kind of losses as do men. Journalist Kirsten Holmstedt says that that made her want to write about one of the greatest experiments to come out of the Iraq War, women in combat. And she was also curious about the challenges that women faced when they came home. So this morning, in this part of our show, we will talk with Kirsten Holmstedt about what she has learned, and you can find that in two books that she has authored. The first is titled Band of Sisters, American Women at War in Iraq, and it is about the experiences of women in combat. But she said she was really curious about the second part of the story, that is, what were the experiences of women when they came home? And so she wrote a second book. And that title of that book is The Girls Come Marching Home, Stories of Women Warriors Returning from the War in Iraq. They're both published by Stackpole Books, so if you're interested in looking at them, you should take advantage of the opportunity. Kirsten is here in Champaign-Urbana to give a talk as part of the Friday Forum series. It's been going on for a very long time at the University of Y on the campus. The theme for the series this spring is Americans at War, and overall it takes a look at the impacts of military power in the 21st century. And she will be speaking about women and their role in the military today. And we're also very pleased to have in the studio as a kind of special guest one of the women that's profiled in The Girls Come Marching Home, C.J. Robinson. She is a retired master sergeant. She served in Iraq as part of the 185th Support Battalion of the Iowa National Guard. And she will also be part of the event here taking place today at the University of Y. And that's at noon on the campus. It's open to anybody who wants to stop by. They should feel welcome. And also here on the show, questions are welcome too. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. You can also send your emails to will-talk@illinois.edu. Thank you both very much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Appreciate it. I wanted to ask Kirsten Holmstedt first. Now, I can see the second book coming out of the first. What was it that drew your interest to this subject, that is, writing about women, not just women in military, but women who had served in Iraq?
I was living in Jacksonville, North Carolina, near Marine Corps Base Camp Lejeune when the war started. And I began a master's in fine arts program at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. And in order to graduate from this program, you have to write a book. And I didn't know what I was going to write the book about. And I started the program in 2002. In 2003, the war started. And I was looking around me for something to write about, and I saw women going off to war for the first time, and I thought there was this huge experiment being played out on the battlefield, and I didn't feel like anyone was paying attention. They were paying attention to the debate about women serving on the battlefield, but not the individual stories. So I was really curious about how they were going to perform and the challenges they were going to face. And I think also, I wondered if 9/11 happened 25 years ago, how would I have responded? So it was kind of a personal journey for me as well.
Yeah. Well, I think it is a great untold, largely unexplored story. The effect on the national psyche of seeing women go off to war. And we've seen men go off forever. And we've seen them, you know, say goodbye to wives and girlfriends and children and moms and dads. But the kind of things that we've seen over the last few years, this is completely different. There's just hasn't really been. That's not to say that women haven't gone off to war before. Mm-hmm. But there seems to me there's a qualitative difference about what we're talking about now, and that we haven't really, I'm not sure that we've really talked about it very much or have really thought about it very much.
That's true. I know on my speaking engagements, I can just hear the jaws hitting the ground as the women who are with me, the vets, talk about their experiences. People just today still have no idea what women are doing over there on the front lines, serving in the convoys, driving the trucks, searching Iraqi women and children, and serving as medics there, and attaching to special forces and infantry. So women are definitely on the front lines over there.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk with C.J. Robinson and start with having you talk about, you know, when you were little and you thought about, or when it was that you thought about how the military as a career.
I come from a big military family, so I am... Kirsten and I have talked about it a couple times. The very first time that I saw my dad pull out his dress green uniform, he was a Vietnam veteran, and I saw the blue cord, the blue infantry cord hanging off that with this fruit salad on his chest, I thought, I want that. And no women had served in my family, so that was the initiative, you know, tell me I can't do something. And it was then, and I knew that's what I would do.
Mm. Well, when you were in Iraq, what kind of jobs did you do?
Initially, I went to be the support operations NCOIC, which in basic terms, it would be to fuel, arm, sustain, subsist, and supply the fighting force. But that sounds great at a desk job. Mm-hmm. That didn't turn out to be the desk job that they thought it would be. Mm. What it became was we were the largest battalion in Iraq at that time. At one point, we had 1,600 soldiers, medics, truck drivers, maintenance, EOD, cooks, and the Army prior to Iraq, those jobs were considered less than because they weren't combat arms. Mm. Now these soldiers who did not receive the same type of intensive training as combat arms were placed in roles where they were doing combat arms jobs. So we had to catch up very fast to get them battle ready. And our roles became very different than what we thought they would.
Yeah. So you were responsible for making sure that the soldiers had everything they needed, gasoline, food, equipment, spare parts, every single thing that they would could conceivably need. You had to make sure that they had all that stuff.
Yes, sir. And it was not just the Army. I also supplied the Marines. Mm-hmm. So I had three divisions, two Army divisions and one Marine division. Then you throw in the civilian contractors that require support. That's a lot of people. Yeah.
And one of the things that I read in reading about your story in Girls Come Marching Home is your feeling that this was not something that you could do sitting at a desk, that you actually had to go out and see what was going on.
Right. I have good parents. My mom is probably the smartest person I know. And I've always been brought up to believe that you'd never ask anybody to do something you won't do. That's my leadership style. I was a very tough and intense leader, but lead by example means that you do what you ask others to do. Mm-hmm. So for me to be able to send 18, 19 to 58-year-old human beings out on the roads, I needed to know what those roads looked like. I needed to know exactly what was happening so that I could relate to the messages I was getting back. And a lot of times to get things done, just like in the civilian world, you need a little Charlie on your shoulder to have some clout to make things happen. So when a first sergeant's riding, it's a lot different than a E5 or E6 being able to accomplish the same mission.
Mm-hmm. I want to go back here to Kirsten Holmstead, and you can reflect on CJ's experience and the other women that you talked to. technically speaking, women are not assigned to combat roles. But the fact is, the way this war is that there's people doing a wide variety of jobs. They may not technically be in combat roles, but the fact of the matter is that you're liable to come under fire, or you could be in a truck and it could hit an IED. And so that technical thing that says women aren't supposed to be in combat sounds to me like that doesn't really mean all that much because of the reality of the experience.
That's true. I don't know what else to say about that. I mean, women are doing a lot of the things that the men are doing over there and finding themselves in it in as much of harm's way as the men. And I was talking to the women earlier, if with the girls come marching home, you could put a man's name in each of those stories. And, you know, I mean, you could transpose the names, and the men and women are just doing very similar jobs.
Yeah. Well, you feel that that the experiences of the women should be documented. That's why you wrote these books. Do you think that the experiences of these women have not been acknowledged? Their contributions, their sacrifices, what they experience haven't really been acknowledged as they should?
I think they're gradually being acknowledged. I wrote these books not because women are better than men or necessarily different from men. It's that this is the first time they've served in combat. And there are thousands and thousands of books about men serving in combat. So why not, you know, put the spotlight on the women? And women are so poor at putting the spotlight on themselves. I mean, they don't want recognition. They want to blend in. So that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book, to put the spotlight on them, because they wouldn't.
Let me ask you, CJ, you don't mind me calling you CJ?
No, that's fine.
About your experiences with the guys that you served with, and whether, generally speaking, they accepted you being there, or were there guys that seemed clearly to feel, whether they said it or not, that they thought they wouldn't, that a woman just shouldn't be doing that?
I would say that when I took that role to begin with, there was some definite animosity, because number one, I was much younger than most of my peers, or I had less time in service than my peers, and I did things so unorthodox. I believe that everybody needs to know everybody else's job, that it wasn't an individual task, it was a team task, and I'm a real team person. So I think at first it was real hard for them to adjust to a new style of leadership. But once we got rolling and they could see that it worked, they were on board. And I served with the finest people. I mean, military people don't say no, regardless of whether they want to, whether their gut says it or not. They've raised their hand once, and yes is all we know. So they may have those feelings, they may second guess you, but at the end of the day they say yes. Now, the coming up against combat arms versus being a service support, that's a little different, because these guys are used to dealing with guys, and it's kind of like being the first girl on the high school football team. And I think that was hard for them till they saw you busting tractor tires and being dead-eye with a rifle and doing the same things. It takes one major incident, and they're never good incidents, for a team to gel. And when they see that you respond effectively in a crisis mode, everybody's on the same team.
What other kinds of stories did women tell you about their interactions with their male colleagues?
Let's see. I know Chrissy DiCaprio, she's a Marine in Band of Sisters, and she went over there and was attached to an MP unit, and she basically she said she had to go in there and prove herself. A lot of them talk about having to prove themselves, I think, kind of like what she was just saying. And once you've done that, you're good to go. But I think the younger generation doesn't have as much of a problem now because they grew up playing basketball and soccer, you know, the girls alongside the guys. So it's not as much of a, as an issue as it was some time ago.
We still have this formal ban against women being in combat units. Now, just fairly recently, there has been a commission, a congressional commission set up that has put out a report saying they think that that combat ban should be lifted, that should go. And there actually have been some surveys, some public opinion surveys, where it actually seems to find that significant numbers of Americans agree. They'd say, yeah. I'm sure that actually implementing that, if it happens, is going to be a lot tougher. What do you think would be the challenges if we actually had combat units that were mixed, men and women? Do you think that would work?
I think that when the Army went to mixed gender training to begin with, it set the stage for latrines and things like that, no showering. That stuff went out the window when that stage was laid out. There are certain things, in my opinion, that women are not suited for because of our build or some of that. It has nothing to do with intelligence, leadership, or those kind of things. However, when I say that, it's because I came up through the ranks being one of few females. Now there are females in all these different fields. I was actually surprised at their ability, how durable they were. Very focused, very creative, problem solving, all those things. They were able to think outside the box rather than just yes. I don't think the public will ever be okay with women coming home in bags. And I don't know how else to say that. You don't see the focus ever on that. You hear the numbers, but it's rare that you see pictures or that you hear actual female fatality stories come out, because I don't think the public is ready for that. It's happening.
Yeah.
It goes on every day. I think that's the biggest barrier.
Mm. How many women have been killed in Iraq?
A little over 100.
Yeah.
I could actually see like a separate special forces or infantry unit maybe that's all female. But I don't know about actually integrating the men and women. But I could see them serving separately. What do you think, CJ?
I don't know. I think we're perfecting our... I mean, the female pilots are tremendous. I've never seen a female in a role that she hasn't handled. But I will say that this idea of women not in combat... Boots on the ground. Once your boots hit that desert sand, you're in combat. There is no safety zone. There is no definitive line. They're everywhere. They can get in anywhere. There is no, we are taking this hill theory anymore. We are in pods all throughout the country. And once you leave the pod, you're at high, high risk. While you're in the pod, you're at high, high risk. I mean, we're dealing with smart people. These are not unintelligent insurgents that are incapable of doing damage.
And what a retired Marine colonel said to me once, and this is huge coming from a Marine colonel, he said, when the guns come out, you're in the infantry, and so many times these convoys are attacked, they come under fire, and there are women on these convoys, and their guns come out. And so as far as he's concerned, they're in the infantry when those guns come out. And coming from a retired Marine colonel, that was huge. Yeah. I'll never forget that.
When you're there, when in Iraq, given that this is the way that it is, do you ever relax? Can you ever kind of let down your guard, or do you always, at some level, always feel like your guard is always up?
Would say that for most that are paying attention, there is no guard down. There's a different intensity when you leave a base or a FOB, forward operating area, and go out into the civilian population where you're driving those roads. So I would say it's the difference of intensity of being on Aspen versus a volcano. The hills of Aspen, getting ready to go down the chute versus standing on a volcano. And that is incredible for people to have that kind of adrenaline for 365 days. There's no way to sustain that momentum as a human being. As a nurse, I know that. But also to not be affected, regardless of whether you were a cook, a medic, a guy that kicks down doors. You're in an environment where your feet hit that sand. You go into that high alert, that adrenaline rush. And that's why none of us come home the same.
Mm-hmm. Our guest here in the studio, C.J. Robinson, she's a retired master sergeant. She served in Iraq as part of the 185th Support Battalion of the Iowa National Guard. And also here is Kirsten Holmstedt. She's a journalist. She has written two books about the experiences of women who served in Iraq. Her first book, Band of Sisters, American Women at War in Iraq, which is really mostly about the experiences of women in Iraq in combat. And then she said, having written that, she was interested in taking it a step further and looking at the experiences of women when they came home. And that's really the focus of the second book, The Girls Come Marching Home, Stories of Women Warriors Returning from the War in Iraq. And C.J. Robinson is one of the women who is profiled in the book. They're both published by Stackpole Books. And they're both here in Champaign-Urbana to speak as part of the Friday Forum series. It's a series of noontime talks happen at the University Y down on the campus. It's open to anybody who would like to attend. And questions here are welcome, too. We do have someone new here we want to bring into the conversation. Others are certainly welcome here in Champaign-Urbana. Number is 333-9455. We also have toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. Email will-talk. WILL-talk@illinois.edu. We have a caller here who is in Effingham, so let's go to them. Line four, hello.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. Two questions. Your guests, I want to ask them how and when they were able to overcome their mother instincts and how society at large arrives at the juncture of calling a femme a female. I mean, it doesn't track male dominance. I understand all about that. But for the metric to disengage from her maternal instincts and begin to kill the same species of both sexes, along with children and old people, and participate in the warmongering that capitalism is. If you could answer those two questions, I would be, I'll be here to listen. Thanks, Dave.
All right. Well, is the question clear? It sounds like he thinks that somehow being female, you have to overcome some inborn desire to
take care of people rather than to shoot them?
Oh, that may be true for some, but I believe that when a soldier gets their orders, there's something about us, whether it be training, whether it be our peers, and the fact that we would never disappoint our buddies. There's a switch that goes on. And during a mission, that switch is automatic. It's flipped. And you're focused on exactly what's happening there at that moment because you're responsible to those people that you serve with. Period. You're taking care of your buddies. Unfortunately, that switch does not automatically get reset when that mission's over. So I don't think that that's different for males versus females. I've seen a lot of males have the same difficulty returning home to their families as women do. The difference is, for me, was that a lot of my guys got to come home and kind of take it easy and gradually get back into mowing the lawn and being the dad. And when I got home, it was, you're home, Mom, here you are. Here's your old role. Pick it up right now. We need you. We missed you. All that kind of stuff. It was the return that was difficult. Yeah. It was not engaging in the mission.
This, Kirsten, sounds to me, and from what I know of the stories here that you've written about and you're talking about it, that this was true for pretty much across the board for women, that their coming home experience in this respect was really different, and that the men, they were given a chance to just kind of take it easy, take it at their own pace, ease back in. But then when the women came home, it was, okay, you're home.
Yeah,
let's
here
go.
Are the kids.
Here are the kids. You know, whoever was minding them said, "Here, they, you know, they're yours." And they were somehow expected to just jump, you know, without hardly taking a breath, jump back into those roles that they had before.
Yeah, and that's really challenging. They don't have that time to decompress. They have to go right into being a mom. They're single, and a lot of them are single moms too. So it's difficult. I wanted to comment on the question the questioner had. And Band of Sisters and The Girls Come Marching Home both start off with a story where a female has to fire at an Iraqi. And Band of Sisters, the first story, she's a Marine. She has no problem returning fire. She's given an order and she fires. And The Girls Come Marching Home, Stacey Blackburn is given an order to shoot an Iraqi boy who's on an overpass and he's got a grenade. And she's told to fire and she's looking down her gun and she's thinking about her nephew back home and how he looks the same age. And she shoots over his shoulder. She doesn't, but she never does that again. She realizes that she put her unit in jeopardy, the folks that were on the convoy. So I think, like she's saying, there's a switch, whether you're a mom or whatever, there's a switch. And when you go on the battlefield, you know, you have a mission and you know, and if it's to shoot somebody to protect your buddies and yourself, I mean, if you don't shoot, you're going to be shot at. Yeah. If you don't shoot, that grenade's going to hit you. So, I mean, it's survival.
Well, and I think one of the things that we know for sure in past wars, where most of the guys who were shooting were guys, is that there were plenty of men who had a hard time shooting somebody else. And that one of the things that the military had to do over time was figure out how to train them so that they would do it, so they would pull the trigger. So I'm sure the reluctance, it's not just, it's something that many, many people feel. Gender, you know, you put that aside. I'm sure looking down the barrel of the gun and knowing you're going to shoot somebody else is not easy. Now, maybe it's a little easier if they're shooting at you, but I'm sure that that's not easy.
Well, there are rules of engagement for that reason. Mm-hmm. You know, we do not fire special ops, that's a whole different ball game. We're talking about the general population of the military has a rule of engagement, and those dictate how things are to be carried out. Most of the time, we do not engage unless having been engaged upon. Mm-hmm. And that is to protect us and the civilian population. But I can tell you that war changes things. War takes a mom from central Iowa who's been in the Army her whole life and thought she was just a hard charger and can deal with anything, and a fairly good-hearted person, I thought I was, to someone who the first time is fired upon or their people are fired upon and hurt is the first time that I have ever, and I've talked to others, have ever experienced the feeling of rage. And rage changes everything. Mm-hmm. Pissed off females are just as bad as pissed off males. So.
Let me ask you one other thing. I have another caller here. I promise I'll get to them. When you talked earlier about how when you were a kid and you saw your dad take out his uniform, his dress greens, and you saw the decorations, and you just said, that's what I want for myself, for life and for a career. Did you think about, though, what when it came to the point where you put the uniform on and you went out to serve, what you would be doing, and did you, in terms of jobs, and did you, in fact, think about picking up a gun and shooting and fighting and being in combat or something else? I mean, what did you see yourself doing once you got to that point?
If you're smart when you go in, you think about doing exactly what they tell you to do. My goal was to be career military, and I actually retired as a first sergeant. And all I wanted to do was lead soldiers and train soldiers. So I was prepared to do whatever they asked me to do. But I really think until you get the call or the message, no one dreams of, a sane person doesn't dream, I want this to be my lifetime dream to go to war and do things that you can't sleep over. But I did dream of success in a career. And I love the discipline. I love the routine. And I love the people. And I just think that people that opt to serve their nation in that capacity are the greatest people that you'll ever come across. They're selfless. And honestly, that most that I know would lay down on a grenade for their buddy. I mean, that's just the way it works. Mm. The sad thing is that women, and I've seen some terrific and outstanding women leaders, great enlisted soldiers, not recognized for their contributions. That is one thing that doesn't sit very well with me. Where are our women Medal of Honor winners? They've done some heroic things. It's just that they don't talk about it. Mm. And it would not look very good on CNN for us that are not to be in combat to have that blue string around our neck and explain how we got it.
Well, and I think a lot of people make the argument, another reason why it's important to lift that combat restriction is that for women who want to have military careers, there's a glass ceiling. Mm-hmm. And that for them to advance and become colonels and generals and members of the Joint Chiefs and, you know, to go as far as possible to rise, that's one of the things that's really getting in the way, I'm sure.
I believe that's partly true, yes.
Let's talk with somebody else here. Let's go to Prairie City, line 4. Hello.
Hello, my name is Gary Burt. I'm interested in one aspect that we really haven't touched on here. Men and women are men and women, and there are lines that have to be drawn. I remember listening to a story about a lady who was in combat. They were in a very tight situation, and it was a lot of nervous tension. So they got to throwing pebbles at each other, and she was a willing participant in that, and she saw no problem whatsoever with that. But then as time went along, the lines got a little further blurred, and some soldier said something, "Show you, open your blouse, let me see your titties." I'm wanting to know, as a sergeant, she has to deal with these kind of problems and all the things that go, ramifications that go along with that. I mean, where do you start drawing the lines? Where do you turn your head as a sergeant and kind of ignore things? And when do you jump in the middle of things and say, hey, that's absolutely not forgiven? I mean, once you get a unit bonded, there's a combat thing, you know, that there's a lot of blurring going on. Where do you start drawing the line? That's what I want to know. That's kind of, you know, that's the big problem that's going to come about as women become more and more involved in military situations like that. I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Well, what do you think?
Well, sir, I would say to you that I see nothing blurred about your question. Whether it be males that would be inappropriate with one another in their units or mixed genders inappropriate, it's not tolerated. And this, our first sergeant, would not look the other way. There's things that happen in an office building that are called harassment, and there's things that go on in the military that are harassment. And I believe that the no-tolerance policy is in place for that reason, and it should be adhered to, period.
What he's talking about is a leadership issue, I believe. In speaking to another Marine officer, he said that in his unit, he treated his people, his Marines, as if they were a family. So if there was any hanky-panky going on, it was incestuous, and it was not permitted. Mm. But I've heard of other units, you know, where there are problems, and it always sounds like it's a leadership problem.
I would agree.
We just have about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus. For people who have just tuned in, I better introduce again guests. Kirsten Holmstedt, she's a journalist. She's written two books now about the experiences of women who fought in Iraq, Band of Sisters and The Girls Come Marching Home. The one is much more about experience in Iraq in combat. The second, more about the experiences that women have when they come home. And here also in the studio with us is C.J. Robinson. She's retired first sergeant. Would that have been a promotion if I made you a master sergeant?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I can't do that for you. She has served in the Iowa National Guard in Iraq, and her story is one of those that is told in The Girls Come Marching Home, and they're both here in Champaign-Urbana. They're going to be at the Friday Forum today at noon. So you can go down to the campus and see them, hear them if you like. Questions, welcome, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. I do want to ask here, someone wrote in an email question that, again, it goes back to this issue of combat and whether women are officially in combat or not. So they're exposed to the same kind of risks in combat, but they don't get combat pay. Do they?
We do get combat.
You do get
pay.
Combat. Oh, okay. So that was what the person was asking. So you're not missing out on combat.
It's called a special. There may be incentive pays for combat arms that only combat arms get. However, we all get hazardous duty pay. We all get separation pay. So I don't unless it would be an incentive for, say, a sniper or something that I'm not aware of, pay is not an issue,
yeah.
Unless
okay.
We don't get paid.
Okay. You know, there's a big part of the story, and your story in particular, I want to at least talk a little bit about it, and we'll try to get in some more callers here. And that is what happens to women who've been hurt when they come home, and they need help. They need medical care and maybe other kinds of help. And it sounds to me like the record of the VA is not very good, to say the least. There's a lot of red tape you got to go through, a lot of paperwork. You constantly got to be justifying yourself. And at the very least, some women, it's just a matter of the places they need to go for help. They're not nearby. You know, they may have to travel long distances to go and see doctors and hospitals and stuff. Can you talk just a little bit about what your experience has been in trying to get health care?
I try to be very cautious about not bashing the Veterans Administration because I know that there are good people working for them, a lot of retired veterans. There are a lot of people that want to do well. However, there was very poor planning on realizing that they were so under-resourced, so undermanned, so unprepared for what was coming at them. Technology has made it so that we can keep people alive that was not even a consideration during Vietnam. Mm-hmm. So, like myself with brain injuries, people are surviving under incredible circumstances, and they were so ill-prepared for that it started this huge snowball effect. And unfortunately, I have not found it to be resolved, and I continually hear those coming behind me facing the same challenges. And I've said it multiple times that I think the fix is easy. Let the federal employees, and I speak to the legislators, be stripped of their health care and be allowed to use the Veterans Administrative Medical Centers and clinics and let their families use those facilities. Let President Obama and his wife take their children in there for a checkup, or Michelle Obama have her OBGY appointment there and see how quick things get noticed. It's just wrong. You asked us to go. You said you would take care of us if something was wrong. You're not living up to that. And that's why I was so fortunate to meet Ms. Homestead, because it allows me to educate the public on that issue. And that's my priority, education. Things that are going on out there are wrong. If you took away 5 or 6 plastic surgeries from some of these legislators, you could fix 15 to 20 mangled hands, arms, legs for soldiers. And they're getting top-notch health care. And soldiers and veterans from World War II sit in waiting rooms in filthy buildings and receive substandard care, period.
Well, we got some time left here, maybe about 5-6 minutes. I have some other callers here, and I want to get a chance to get them in. We'll go to Thomasboro next, line one.
Good morning, David.
Hi.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with her more completely. I just literally got off the phone with the VA just minutes before I turned on the radio, dealing with the other females who have incredible medical problems, and they can't get the care, plus my own. The other thing, what I learned in 35 years in the military is the females are incredibly capable, if not as much more than the men, of doing their assigned task. And First Sergeant, I think you'll agree with that completely. And then the other thing, too, on this thing is one of the problems we ran into in Iraq and Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and all of this stuff, and every place I've been, Vietnam, the hygiene problems of the females in combat are just incredibly, incredibly significant. And as a consequence, the physiological effects from the exposures and everything take an incredible toll, as she has just talked about. And then the medical care for all the veterans is totally broken. So anyhow, if she can just make some comments on that as far as, you know, her experience with the hygiene and everything else.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I would agree with you, and thank you for your comments. Females are very capable. They're surprising. Then you never know what they're going to do. I would say that it is very easy for a man to urinate on a truck tire. You have 7 minutes before the enemy fixes in on your position when you're on the side of the road. It takes females about 2 minutes to get their gear off and their britches down. And we don't have the luxury of peeing on a truck tire. So you start there, you move to showers, and you go on and on down the line. It would not take a rocket scientist to come up with some methods that would make it much easier, especially with as many medical professional females that have served that could make that much more doable. But yes, it's an issue. It is. I think it's completely one that's we're able to overcome.
How so? So I hear you saying, "Well, yeah, that's an issue, but they're solvable problems." How long, though, do you think it would take, actually, to solve that? A generation, maybe? You know, how long would we have to get, and how many more women would we have to get in before that would seem like that wasn't quite as big of a deal?
I would say if we had, I believe it was a retired lieutenant colonel that just called. Is that what he said?
I think he was a major, but oh. I don't recall.
If we had a few smart guys like that and a few smart women like that, we could have it resolved in about 3 hours with a couple engineers to create some devices and then slowly implement it. It's just that doable.
We got about 5 minutes left in this part of Focus. Someone wants to call. We'll try to get them in. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, I just would like to have C.J. Robinson talk some more about yourself and how you feel you're doing.
I think that my path is so different than I thought it was going to be. My life was completely planned, and that's a military fault that it's ingrained, that I would retire on this date, I would be this rank, I would do this, I would do that. What happened to me, having a brain injury, being in and out of VA hospitals, and seizures, getting sick, and starting all the way over, it's taken such a toll on my family. Mm-hmm. That's been incredible. But out of all that, so many wonderful things have happened to me because of this situation. I'm getting to meet people with the same issues, or many of them with much worse, then we're allowed to engage in conversations of hope and solution rather than problem. I'm a much more compassionate and probably soft person. People still confuse my poor speech with stupidity, which is a very bad thing to do, because it just encourages me to go that much harder. I think that I'm a better mother, a better friend, and I think I'm much more determined to find other women that find it weak to say I have PTSD, but it's okay for a man to say it, or to say, this was done to me and it was wrong and it needs to be fixed. I also have found that the Vietnam veterans, because my dad is one, and other groups are banding together now for a cause, because their war was no better or worse than my war. It was just a different war. And why do we not, as the biggest populace in the United States, veterans, we need to band together and force change. And it's just going to take a few voices and a few more voices to get people rallied together and motivated to take back what is ours. This is our this is our nation. This is our United States. And we are allowing others the freedom to live here, to provide for their families, to do great things. But it's our turn to take that back and say, we gave you these rights. We ensure that these are here for you. You have a responsibility to us, and it's time for us to make it better for those that come behind. And I really feel very strongly about the kid that comes behind me. It needs to be better for him than it was for me.
We have another caller, a couple. Maybe I'll try real quick to get in one more in Paris, Illinois, line four. Hello.
Good morning. First, I'd like to thank you, Sergeant, for your service to our country. Thank you so much. Second question I have, nobody's come straight out and said it, and I will. How do women deal with menstruation when they're in the middle of a combat zone? You know, it's something I've always wondered. It's kind of straightforward, I understand, but it's just a question I'd like to have answered. Thank you very much, and I'll listen offline.
Okay. Well,
I'm pretty much the same as it is when you're in Iowa. You get the products you need, you take care of business, and a lot of baby wipes. That's about the best way to put that.
Okay. We're at the point here where we have to pretty much finish up. And I don't know if, Kirsten, if there's any last sort of thought you'd like to leave with people.
Yeah. Just that I think the American population underestimates women. I think they're a lot stronger and resilient than people realize. And, you know, give them credit. Give the women credit.
Yeah. CJ?
I would just like to thank you for giving me the opportunity. I know when I speak, I have a lot of voices. Those that didn't get to come home and those that came home and were shaped that me, and I know that they're with me when I make these comments. So, and I would also like to thank all those that serve. What a great, great honor it is to do. And I would do nothing different.
Our guest here, C.J. Robinson, she's a retired first sergeant from the Iowa National Guard. She served in Iraq, and she's profiled in the book The Girls Come Marching Home by our guest, Kirsten Holmstedt. Also, her first book is Band of Sisters, and they'll be at the Friday Forum, the University Y, speaking at noon today down on the campus. So anybody who wants to be there should feel welcome. Thanks very much. We appreciate it.